I'm going to talk for about, maybe 20, 25 minutes, and then Lee is going to give a financial state, and then we'll hope to provide some time for questions at the end. As I thought about what to say, I was grateful to Pat Schaefer for bringing to my attention the latest issue of CNRL News, which included a report from the ACRL Research Committee on top assumptions for the future of academic libraries and librarians. And I thought, well, let's see how Cornell Library stacks up against these assumptions. These are not, you know, major earth-shaking things, but they are trends that are in place, and libraries are going to have to respond to them and embrace them in their processes. So there's 10 of them. There'll be increased emphasis on digitizing collections. Duh. I mean, these are in ranked order. Skill sets for librarians will continue to evolve. Students and faculty will demand faster and greater access. The debates about IP will become increasingly common. The demand for technology-related services will grow. Higher education will increasingly be viewed as a business. Students will expect high-quality facilities and services. Distance learning will coexist with in-person instruction. Free public access to publicly funded research will become more common, and privacy will continue to be an important issue for libraries. So I'm going to take them one at a time. Digitizing collections. We have this cartoon here from a couple of years ago from Foxtrot. Google's putting a bunch of libraries online. Wow. And then the computer says, shh. Clearly they're sparing no details, I can see. I hate this cartoon for a number of reasons. First of all, it's assuming that libraries will be superseded by search engines and other providers of information. And second of all, it assumes that librarians spend their time shushing people, and we know that's not true. But we do know that there is a major effort going on to digitize material from research libraries. It began with the Google 5. It's now up to, I think, the Google 14. We signed an agreement last year to work with Microsoft to digitize major holdings. We have a project with Amazon and BookSurge to provide print-on-demand copies of our digital books. And there are other potential contracts in the wings. This is both a good thing and a bad thing. We know that users are interested in having access to material online, and that that ease of access and use of materials are highly correlated, and they can lead to new breakthroughs in learning and teaching. On the other hand, as we think about it, there are the clash of giants is going on. We have Microsoft going up against Google, trying to segregate portions of the written record and only make it available through their search engine technologies. We have the Million Books Project. We have the Open Content Alliance. We have Amazon, and there will be others coming up as well. It's a mixed blessing for universities in that while we are able to digitize a major portion of our collections through these initiatives, the scale and ramp up of this is significantly straining resources. Large scale digitization used to be in the thousands, and now large scale is in the millions, and I wouldn't be surprised if it reached the billions soon. We also get in bed with commercial entities who do not have the same value set that we do, despite what Google's claimed goals are. They are motivated by making money and advertising and competing with one another. We have concerns around the restrictions on the use of these materials and academic freedom. There are compromises around the quality of the content. There are digital preservation issues. There are major concerns not just in the digitization, but the long-term management of such items over time. And the various pockets of searching require readers to go from one search engine to another. Nonetheless, this is a trend that will continue, and Cornell is in the thick of it. Second trend is that the skill sets for librarians will continue to evolve in response to the needs and expectations of an increasingly changing and demanding clientele, both faculty and students and others. While the library and information science degree will remain strong, I believe the future will require us to develop a community of allied professionals and experts working together within research libraries. And we will need not only deeper subject expertise, but also technical leadership and managerial skills. Toward that end, the library is pleased to be piloting the Covey Leadership Program in May. How many of you will be participating in that? Raise your hands. 11. Great. So, and we expect from that experience to develop something that will reach broader library participation. We also know about the aging of our profession, and there is work underway now to look at succession planning. I expect concrete steps to be announced very soon in that area. We're going to need to be more flexible around the recruitment of academics and support staff, and not only are we going to have to recruit them in an increasingly competitive environment, but also we're going to have to work hard to retain them and to constantly retrain ourselves. Part of retraining involves exposure to what's going on in other libraries around the world, and particularly in this country. And so Lee and I are pleased, and Susan, to announce that effective with this ALA, the conference travel support will be increased to 1,000 for all staff. And there will still be the $400 surcharge for those who are in leadership positions. In the endowed, right, right. But we talked with them about that. So, number three, students and faculty will increasingly demand faster and greater access to resources and services. We have seen the issue of usability becoming a stronger motivator for selection by the selectors, who not only have to look at the content in digital materials, but also their usability, both native interfaces and the ability for materials to be used across various collections. There is no digital equivalent to the convention of the book, which publishers know, which libraries know, and users know how to use. We have last month introduced a new service for federated searching across databases and images, which has, I think, represents a stake in the ground to moving in this new direction to provide faster and greater access to materials. It has, you know, some growing pains associated with it, but there are some benefits that are being reaped right now. I love this quote from a student. I found that the Find It service was instrumental in helping me find a quality of primary sources for my class research paper. Great work. I think the real key here is that when only academic resources will do. I think that's a real key theme of Find It. When Skorton came to visit with Karen and me and Sarah in December, he was very complimentary about the library, with one exception, that there was a lack of transparency in terms of the use and access of resources across the two major campuses of the university. And so we're not stupid in the library. We snapped to, and there is a group headed by Ed Weissman, who is working to develop a report to the president in June, detailing the issues associated with making the seamless access to resources across the two campuses. There are certainly major issues outside of the library to contend with separate networks and authentication systems, which are incompatible, If a faculty member has a joint appointment, they have two net IDs to deal with. There is a separate library catalogs and access systems. While there's an 80% overlap on subscriptions and licenses, there are still considerable gaps in terms of access to materials. While medical folks were looking at the cost of backfile access to Nature, it would cost $63,000, and key titles in Elsevier would run $320,000, and that does not provide access to the Ithaca campus. There are also consortial arrangements that while Med has with other hospitals in the New York City area. For instance, they rely on Sloan Kettering for cancer journals, which are accessible to clientele in New York, but not in Ithaca. David Scorton called me a couple of weeks ago. Of course, thought I was being fired, but he was mainly interested in having a letter of detailing the issues from Carolyn and me, which we were happy to submit to him. And I gather from John Silicano that he used it forcefully in discussions with the vice president and the provost. Number four. Debates about intellectual property will be common. While this is not a new issue, there is an increasing opportunity for infringement of rights for both users and authors in the online world. So consider these scenarios. Robert Gilmore, the Associate Dean for Research and Graduate Education in the Vet School, was charged $400 for permission to use one of his figures in a subsequent paper. Peter Hurdle tells me that he did not pay it, and he has not yet been sued. This is a powerful motivator for faculty members to consider their rights as they publish in a commercial with commercial and scholarly publishers. Recently, and I love this one, a graduate student wanted to include in an article a chapter that he had published in his thesis, and like a good citizen, he checked with the CCC and found that the permission fees would have been $1,400. We all know that in March of last year, the Association of Publishers contacted Cornell about an alleged infringement of copyright in relation to its online digital distribution system, e-reserves. And I found out within the last week that Duke and Syracuse, Texas A&M, and the University of Florida have also received similar letters. And as I mentioned earlier, last fall, we signed a contract with Microsoft to digitize books. All of these things had IP-related issues, and they have kept both Peter and Fiona and other staff very busy. We have concerns and have always had concerns about the ability to provide access, unfettered access to information of all kinds. We are increasingly having to address issues associated with our author and publisher rights, and we want to be forceful in asserting user rights to copyright. This has led in other libraries, including here at Cornell, to the establishment of intellectual property officer positions, and the responsibilities range wide and far, from public awareness to teaching to compliance monitoring, protecting fair use, and negotiating licenses. Number five, the demand for technology-related services will grow and require additional funding. Libraries' operating budgets are typically in two areas, and Lee will talk to them. They deal with staff and collections, and that comprises about 87% of our budget. Yet there is an insatiable, seemingly insatiable need to build and maintain and develop our technical infrastructure for supporting the retrieval, access, and use of materials. Where are the funds going to come from? They can come from redirecting resources within the library, and we've certainly done a lot of that. Securing additional support from the university, and anyone who is a candidate for the university librarian should make that a precondition for their acceptance of the position. And also the need to partner with CIT and others in offering some base level services. With Karen Calhoun's departure, you know that both Oya and Scott have taken on the roles of supporting DLIT and technical services, respectively. I also see this as an opportunity for us to bring in some consultants to help us consider our IT reach, our IT capabilities, and our IT ambitions. And I'm hopeful over the course of this summer we will be having a number of visitors to come and speak with us within the library and key constituents and stakeholders within the university. So stay tuned on that one. Number six. Yes. Higher education will increasingly view the institution as a business. The university is becoming extremely focused on fundraising. It's not surprising. We're in a $4 billion campaign. Grant writing, maximizing revenues, reducing costs, and optimizing physical space. The library will need to respond and defend the role that it plays. And I think one of the key things we want to do in our campaign is to make the case that a great research library is vital to a great university. The research and assessment unit under Sheen Lee is really looking at issues around this as they retarget their work. And as we are developing the library campaign case statement, we're very much thinking about these issues as we look at students, faculty, and programs. So, making the case, the importance to faculty. Biddy Martin talked about the state of the university and indicated that there will be approximately 600 new faculty to be recruited in the next decade, and she was very adamant about the fact that we would not be replicating the faculty that who are currently here, but looking toward diversity and also toward new fields and new research areas. What role can the library play in ensuring that the university is competitive in competing for such faculty? Cornell isn't alone in facing the same sort of demographic bulge, and we will be competing with peer institutions for the best and the brightest. I was interested to read the Provost Advisory Committee report in November of 2006 on work-life satisfaction for faculty, and it struck me the finding that intellectual stimulation and library resources were the leading indicators for faculty work-life satisfaction. And for women faculty members, job satisfaction was most highly correlated with library resources. Can we make the case that the library is critical to the recruitment? A new faculty member wrote, "Your guided tour of the library was one of the things that really got me hooked on coming to Cornell." Can we make the fact that scientists and other scholars use the library even when they don't walk into our doors? A professor in the sciences wrote, "At first I thought I didn't use the library at all until I realized that in fact I use it every day to access online journals." Can we make the fact that access to library resources provides a richer and deeper environment for both teaching and research? And here we have Howard Howland from Neurobiology and Behavior writing, "Online access is great. It makes it possible to create lectures that cover a much broader range." And can we make the fact that access to resources and services from the library dramatically enrich the educational experience? A faculty member writes, "I have really enjoyed your presentations, and I know that the students benefit greatly. The results are evident in their papers." Sheen Lee met with the library management team yesterday to talk about these new measures that ARL is proposing, which will look very much at outcomes and the results of the library within the academy. Making the case. We trot out VIVO at almost every opportunity, and I am so sold on it. I would suggest that at this point, Cornell equals a community of scholarship divided by academic silos. And what the promise of VIVO is to break those silos down and to not only expose scholarship, but to bring scholars together. And so with the provost's funding, Vivo Plus has a goal to present the depth and breadth of research and scholarship at Cornell across multiple disciplines, independent of Cornell's administrative structure. I've been sitting in on the dean meetings, and it has struck me that while each dean may have a good sense of what's happening in their particular school, they're clueless about possible connections across other schools. So the Life Science Portal will remain, and the system will be extended and is being extended to social sciences, physical sciences, and engineering, soon humanities. International theme research, interests in India and Africa are looming large in Scorton's mind, and Weill Cornell Medical. There are beneficiaries that are not only current and prospective students and faculty, but administrators, donors, legislators, and alumni as well. How do we make the case of the importance of the library to students? LibQual tells us that 30% of students, both graduate and undergraduate, use the library premise, the physical premise, on a daily basis. We are consistently number one in the minds of graduating services in terms of key services that are provided by the university, ahead of dining, athletic facilities, and computing. Second only to facilities for their particular disciplines, students in the process of recruitment identify the library as the most important facility. We know that the use of libraries increases following renovation and modernization. We've seen that occur in those libraries that have had facelifts or brand new buildings, Africana, engineering, the physical science,